Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
All right, final hour of the program. John Dickinson and Kyle Madsen flying along here on a Sunday. 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. You can text us at that number as well, Kyle. Good baseball chat in the last hour.
I love talking baseball.
And we'll get an opportunity to do more of that here as the baseball season is set to get underway over the course of the next few weeks. The NBA ready to roll here in about a month, COVID-19 permitting, of course. The Warriors, though, are not going to be a part of it. And, you know, it's so funny. I was telling Nash this yesterday when I was on with him. And I said, you know, I saw during the week, but I'm actually on a run, of hosting, you know, here the last couple of weeks. I think today is the 13th day out of 16.
Wow.
That I've been on, you know, one show or another or hosting here on the weekend. And one of the days that I didn't work and I kind of checked out was Tuesday. And it was funny because that was the day that Draymond Green made some headlines. And, you know, we haven't had in a while. I kind of joked about this yesterday. We haven't had a Draymond, you know, Draymond speaks to the haters.
Right.
You know, kind of a topic. And so I remember seeing it pop up on some notification. So I jotted it down because I constantly jot things down, you know, throughout the week that we're going to talk about on the weekend, or if I get, you know, called in to sub for one of the weekday shows as has happened quite a bit lately. I got a bunch of things to dive into and to bring to the table and talk about. So in preparing for the show yesterday and today, I went back and I looked at Draymond has a message for the haters, which is just, you know, and I kind of LOL at the end of that because, you know, typically these things are much ado about nothing. And I'll be honest with you, Kyle, I couldn't even freaking find I'm like, was he on a show? Was he on a podcast? Was he doing an interview? Was it an article? And I went through like a half hour trying to find out what the hell he said or who he said it to. And it wound up just being an IG story post based on a freaking picture that the Warriors posted of a stat line of his from one of the greatest games that he's had in his career that occurred in January of freaking 2016.
Peak Draymond.
I mean, it was peak Draymond in terms of that night, for sure. And look, this all started on Tuesday, and I know you guys talked about it on Bonte, Steiny, and Guru. It all came from Draymond basically quote storying a picture of the Warriors putting a pic of him up from a game on January 2nd, 2016 against the Nuggets, where he scored 29 points with 17 boards, 14 assists, 4 steals. The Warriors beat Denver in overtime. That was a crazy game where the Warriors got off to a massive lead, and then the Nuggets, who weren't very good, hit a bunch of threes and tied the game and sent it to overtime late, and the Warriors wound up winning it. They were 31-2, Kyle, after that win.
That sounds fake. Like that sounds like a typo.
They were 31-2
gosh,
with the victory on January the 2nd of 2016 against the Nuggets. Draymond with that unbelievable triple-double, four steals. And Draymond basically, I used the term, I was kind of half kidding. He put that in his story and then commented, "Yeah, I'm going back to being that guy since they all seem to have forgotten." So Draymond has a message for all the haters. Is Draymond capable of getting back to that level for a full year or two in your mind?
Well, I have two things on this. Before I answer your question, I have a little bit of an issue with Draymond here saying that, like, since they seem to have forgotten. Yeah, because you stopped. Like, it would be like me not doing any of my homework for a whole year, having an F in a class, and going, "Oh, I see you've all forgotten I'm an A student." Like, well, yeah, if you're not going to act like one or you're not going to be one, then you're going to get an F. And that's how I feel Draymond was this year. Like, of course people forgot. You didn't try. I don't want to say you didn't try, but he was not that guy this year. And by saying this, he's either admitting that he was mailing it in, or he was playing hurt. But I don't think we'll ever see peak Draymond again. And that's something that at the time there was concern that, like, hey, how's his game going to age? Because he's undersized and he doesn't have a ton of athleticism, but he has enough that he can anticipate, and he's the smartest player on the team, and he makes do. But I think because he is so incredibly smart, like, it's like Richard Sherman with the Niners. Richard Sherman has never been a top-notch athlete, but even as he's gotten older, he's gotten smarter, and he makes up for lacks of athleticism, or what he lacks in athleticism, with always being a step ahead of the receiver IQ-wise. And I think that's where Draymond's going to be. I don't think we'll see DPOY Draymond again, but I think he can still anchor a very good defense. I don't know what he means by that guy.
Yeah, I think he can. South of Defensive Player of the Year, I'm with you on that. I do think he can get back to close to peak Draymond. For how long, though, is the question? One year? Yes. 2 years? Maybe. But then that's about it. And, you know, that goes as well toward kind of where I'm at with the Warriors as a whole. And I think your take on that is outstanding in terms of, yeah, we don't think you're that guy because you chose not to be in part. And I think the analogy about, you know, doing your homework and all, I think that's perfectly stated. So that being said, this year will ultimately determine it.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't get to do what you did this year again. Like, you don't get to coast.
Yep. Yep.
And here's the bigger picture as it pertains to the Warriors. And I think this is something that people don't talk about enough. The Warriors can't coast anymore.
Yes.
The Warriors cannot show up and win 50 games. Like, unless their draft pick is a stud that's impactful immediately and, like, their third best player. That is going to be their best player in 3 years. You know what I mean? Like, unless that, like, that's the one wild card where I'll say, okay, maybe they can get to a point where, like, Draymond's going to have to get back to close to his peak, and Steph's going to have to get back to close to his peak and playing regularly, and Klay's going to have to come back and be close to his peak, and they're going to have to care about the regular season. And I think at times Warriors fans just believe that that's a foregone conclusion. Like, they're just going to come back and care because right. I think Warriors fans care. Like Warriors fans were ticked off, annoyed, you know, whatever, rolled their eyes at this year. I mean, look, it was an unbelievably bad set of circumstances that have set, you know, set the Warriors season ablaze, basically.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And everybody understands that. But to just have the belief that you're automatically going to be back, I think it's a little bit foolish. And saying that, I don't think it necessarily means – it doesn't mean the Warriors can't be good or can't be great. It just means those three players are going to have to be pretty darn close to what they were. And, oh, by the way, I don't think even that alone is enough. It's all about what you do with the other – you know, the next four or five roster spots, I think, in addition to that.
Yes, I think the strength in numbers mantra is going to matter more this year than any year over the last five.
Only you don't trust the numbers like you did necessarily before, right?
Right. It's not going to be somebody as good as Andre Iguodala was. It's probably not. You can find somebody who is Sean Livingston-esque, I guess. That's not that. Out of this world, but that depth is going to have to be better because the top end talent isn't going to be as good. And that's not to say that Steph and Clay and Draymond can't be the three best players on a title team. I think they can, but Andrew Wiggins has to be better than he's been. He has to be the best version of himself. And you said their draft pick from this year, you know, and if they're not trading it, if they're picking a player and that player is going to be on the team, he has to be contributing minutes. And Eric Paschal has to be better. Marquese Chris has to continue progressing as a player and be better than he was over the quick stretch he was with the team this year. So I think the strength in numbers thing is going to matter more now, because the numbers have to be better players.
Yeah, and I think as long as you're acknowledging that the guys that are numbers and strength in numbers are unknowns largely.
Yes, that's
you know, it's because as I'm filling out my roster and jotting it down, you know, for the Warriors, and I say Steph and Clay and Draymond, and even if I give them the benefit of the doubt for coming back and being close to peak, maybe not at peak, but close to peak. And I agree with you. They can be the three best players on a championship team. I do think that's still possible. I very much believe that that's still possible. But the truth of it is, it's about what can Andrew Wiggins be? And what is your draft pick? And how do you use your trade exception and your mid-level exception,
yep,
and maybe two veteran minimums. It's how do you use those next four or five slots? See, to me, it's about the big three and then Wiggins and then the unknowns and then guys like Paschal and Chris and then to a lesser extent, anybody else that was on the roster last year.
Yeah,
like I don't count on anything from Kai Bowman. I don't count on anything from Jordan Poole. I don't count on anything from Michael Mulder. You know, no offense to those guys.
Yeah, I don't think they're rotation players on a title team.
And no chance. And I think, you know, Paschal can play and Chris can play, but you know, we're talking about the four guys that I mentioned. And I think Damian Lee is another guy that's in that mix of Paschal and Chris and Damian Lee. I think are three guys that can play, but it's the four guys at the top, and then it's those three guys at the bottom of playable players, and then there's this gap of four or five guys that still need to be added in between those two, and then it's everybody else at the back end. So it's, right, to me, what you make of those four or five unknowns in the middle that ultimately are going to determine, in conjunction with Steph, Clay, and Draymond being close to their peak, whether or not the Warriors can be a championship-level team again.
So is your starting five, if you're jotting this down right now, Curry, Thompson, Draymond, Wiggins, and Chris?
Yes, although I don't necessarily think that Chris has to be.
Okay. But to you...
But he would be right now.
So where I was getting to was...
But you know what? You know what? And I'll jump in real quick. You know what, though? If Mark Gasol will come play for a veteran's minimum, then it's Mark Gasol.
He's starting. Right. Sure. And that's and I guess that's kind of the whole point, because I think Marquese Chris is a way better player as a 20-minute off-the-bench guy than starting and playing big minutes 100%. As a starter.
So you're not penciling in as Chris is my center and we're good.
Right. So, and that's an upgrade for him, by the way, to be a like, hey, he can play 15 to 20 minutes off the bench for a championship contender. That's an upgrade for him, and it's a testament to how good he was this year. But to your point, it's those like who are the top seven guys? And I think the five are there with those five, but then who are six and seven? And I don't think they have a championship sixth and seventh guy right now, which is, I think, the point you were making.
And maybe even eighth.
Yeah.
I mean,
how many minutes is in an ideal world? How many minutes is Pascal playing? Like 18?
20?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and filling in for, you know, Draymond on the night that Draymond needs off. Like, and that, like, that's the other thing I think we know about Pascal now. Like, Pascal's got to be a four or a small ball five.
Yes.
Like, the days of, like, Pascal's, could Pascal be a three? Like, those days to me are over.
Yeah.
I agree. To me, it's more about, you know, can Eric Pascal in some ways kind of become, and look, this is a stretch, but can Eric Pascal at some point become like PJ Tucker?
Sure.
You know, that's like that. Yeah. Like, that's kind of where I'm going with it.
I don't even know if that's that big of a stretch. I guess Tucker's a better shooter, but no, I
well, and that would be part
that,
of it.
In that mold, for sure. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibilities.
So I mean, I'm looking at it as Curry, Thompson, Wiggins, Green, and I'm literally writing it down. And then, you know, yeah, Chris is in the mix in terms of your bigs. And Pascal and Lee are guys that you're comfortable enough, you know, playing. So that's seven guys. But as you start filling out your roster, you know, you've got, you know, your pick, you've got your trade exception, you've got your mid-level exception, you've got, you know, a vet minimum, at least one, if, you know, if not two. I mean, I think you could sign two vet minimum guys. Mm-hmm. As long as now, am I leaving anybody out that should be in the mix of, hey, this guy's going to play next year? Because I think Lee, Pascal, and Chris, among the players that they have, to me, that's where it ends. Like, I don't consider, you know, like Bowman and
if one of those guys winds up, there would need to be a massive leap, and maybe that happens, and they're on the roster, fine. But as they stand, as what we saw in 65 games this year, I don't think there's anybody else that should be playing big minutes for a contender.
So if you throw, let's say, Bowman and Poole and Mulder and even like Juan Toscano-Anderson, you put him, you know, you put those guys kind of on the outside looking in, maybe those are your 13th, 14th, 15th, maybe two-way, you know, what, like, you know, depth guys in that sense. Poole, I still think, would be a project. You know, somebody that would be around and on the team and still could grow into a player, but wouldn't be somebody you're going to count on next year. But to me, it's so you have seven guys, basically of your top 12,
mm-hmm.
right? That you know seven of you. So you basically know your top four, and you know your 9, 10, 11, or 10, 11, 12 in a sense. It's just. Oh, you know what? Looney's another one. The text line, great job with that. Looney definitely is in that mix. So we did forget Looney. Although, again, he's going to be available. He's going to have to show that he's healthy.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're tied. So Looney, Chris, and you need one more big man. So you're going to need one more. And, like, you know, Marc Gasol would be perfect.
That'd be great.
Like, if you said, hey, the centers are Looney,
it's Brook Lopez,
Gasol, Chris. You know, I think Mark, whose contract?
Brook Lopez just signed a big contract. Never mind.
Yeah. So, if it, and again, I'm just throwing a name out there.
Sure.
But it's you know, one, a veteran center for the minimum, Chris, Looney, if those are your centers, you know it's Curry, Thompson, Wiggins, Green. You got that. And you know you've got Pascal and Lee in the mix. And then you've got your pick. And look, your pick could be, you know, your pick could wind up being a player and a veteran. Like, your pick could, because you might trade back for a veteran and get another player.
Right.
So, you know, I think it's, there's options there, but you have to look at, I think that's how you have to start to pencil it out when you start to look at how you're evaluating the roster.
And this is all predicated, going back to the start of this conversation, on Draymond Green being Draymond Green again, or 90% of peak Draymond Green. Because if he's playing like he did this year, I think that dramatically alters the Warriors' title hopes.
Let's go to Mark in L.A., and then there's one more thing before we continue the conversation that you wanted to get to. But Mark is up next here on the phone lines. Mark, you're on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, good afternoon.
What's up, Mark?
I'm a huge Draymond Green fan. I'm also, because I'm in my, I was a huge 80s basketball kid, so I'm also a huge Barkley fan. I think their career arcs and also their personas seem to be coming along in the same path. And so I think that I would really love the rift between Barkley and Draymond to kind of settle. And I'd love Barkley to mentor Draymond. I think he's got that same fight. He's definitely a glue guy. He's the epitome of, you know, brawn and team unity. But I get it. He gets out of hand sometimes. I feel like if someone were to reach out, and maybe because of this call, Barkley and Draymond would make amends. I think that Draymond could up his stats and be another 3- or 4-time All-Star.
Thanks for the call. I don't know if I see a 3- or 4-time All-Star, Kyle, but I do see the, like, look, Charles Barkley, like, here's one thing, like, people need to realize. I'm just going to say this. Charles Barkley was 10 times the player Draymond Green was.
Like, not even close. It's like, and I love, like, Draymond, but come on.
Like, what are Charles Barkley was 20 times the player that Draymond, like, it, like, it's not, like, and again, that's not disrespectful to Draymond. Like, Charles Barkley was that good.
Like, if
Charles Barkley isn't Kendrick frickin' Perkins.
Right. Plug Charles Barkley in for Draymond over the last 5 years, and the Warriors have 5 titles.
Yes.
I don't mean to knock Draymond at all. It's just Charles Barkley is, like, one of the 20 best players of all time kind of guy. And Draymond.
No doubt. You had a quick take here, and we got to get rolling. We'll come back.
This is really quick, and it's kind of funny. Do you remember last week I put the over under on players who would sit out the Orlando bubble at 4.5, and you were like, over by a lot. We're already at 5, and that was that was a week ago. So it was just reported today that Wilson Chandler will not be playing for the Nets.
Okay.
In Orlando, which makes, by my count, Wilson Chandler, Avery Bradley, Davis Bertans, Trevor Ariza, and Willie Cauley-Stein. That's 5. The 4.5 over his hip.
If we had, yeah, that was that. That to me was easy.
Easy money.
Wilson Chandler, by the way, another player that's made a ton of money in his career. So, makes sense. Ariza, another one, made a ton of money in his career and won a championship. All right, we'll come back and we'll wrap things up here. John Dickinson, Kyle Madsen on 95.7 The Game.
to 95.7 The Game.
All right, final segment. John Dickinson and Kyle Madsen. 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. Talking a little Warriors here on a Sunday. We'll also get into, before we get out of here, a little little chat about what something that I guess we were both hip to, or at least believed would become a story. We can just get into it right now. Aaron Rodgers and the 49ers. Look, the 49ers lost the Super Bowl. Jimmy Garoppolo had a really good season. Should be the starting quarterback for the 49ers in 2020 without a doubt. And, you know, he's a guy that has shown that he can lead a team to a Super Bowl and be very close to winning it. Did he play great in the playoffs? No. Did he play great in a lot of regular season games to help the 49ers get to the playoffs? Absolutely. For all intents and purposes, he's their, you know, franchise quarterback for 2020 and maybe beyond that. We good so far, Kyle?
Yeah, we're on the same page so far.
Aaron Rodgers has won a Super Bowl, is one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. I've always believed is a tick overrated for being in the category of greatest of all time, but still very much in that category, has won a Super Bowl. He, after years of back and forth, he ran off Mike McCarthy. LaFleur, the new head coach in Green Bay in 2019, they had success. What they won? Did they win 13 games or 12 games? They won 13 games.
Yeah, them and the Niners are both 13-3.
Yeah, they won 13 games. They made it to the NFC Championship game. The 49ers throttled them. But one thing that I've said, and I guess you've said in March, and I kind of said in the offseason, you know, if things get weird between Rodgers and the Packers, and Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't win the Super Bowl, and there still continues to be this, you know, conversation about whether or not, you know, he can get them over the hump to win a Super Bowl, regardless of if he's able to keep them in the playoff mix every year. If that conversation continues, there could be a meeting point at the end of the 2020 season and in the winter and early spring of 21 where Aaron Rodgers to the 49ers becomes a major talking point, if not a story. Now, it's not a story now, right? Because nobody's actually written anything, and correct me if I'm wrong, nobody's actually written or reported anything about Aaron Rodgers would be interested in the Niners would be interested in Aaron Rodgers. If things fray, you know, that could be a match down the line. Like, nobody's actually reported that. But my belief on this, and it sounds like yours too, was only enhanced when the Packers selected Jordan Love from Utah State as a first-round pick.
Right.
Are the Packers preparing essentially to do to Aaron Rodgers what they did to Brett Favre? Well, it remains to be seen over the course of the next couple of years. Where are you on this? Because I didn't know we were aligned on it, honestly, until we discussed it before the show. I think if the Niners don't win the Super Bowl and the Packers don't win the Super Bowl, which could, you know, probably likely that both of those things happen, more likely than not that both those things happen, mm-hmm. I think we're going to be having a conversation about that right as we're at the end of the pandemic in February or March of 21.
Yeah, man. It's like I struggle with this because I was a fan of Aaron Rodgers for a long time. That's waned a little bit in recent years, just kind of as I've seen him a couple times in person, and there are just some things about what he does on the sideline and the way he kind of acts that rub me the wrong way. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. I say often that Aaron Rodgers is the most talented football thrower I've ever seen. I don't want to call him the greatest quarterback I've ever seen because I've watched Tom Brady, But Rodgers, all the things he can do manipulating the pocket with his feet and the arm angles he can throw from and the windows he can fit throws into, I mean, it's ridiculous. And he's really good. But he's 36. He turns 37 in December. And he's owed a lot of money. And I think the Packers are working on kind of the next stage of their existence. You have Matt LaFleur who came in and now he has to deal with Aaron Rodgers and he goes 13-3 in his first year. He's feeling himself a little bit. He goes, hey, Jordan Love, he got Patrick Mahomes type potential. That's what some draft analysts said. So that's going to be my guy and we'll try and win a Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers over the next couple of years. By the time Aaron Rodgers becomes quote unquote available to the 49ers, he'll be close to 40, if not 40. And the 49ers will either be giving Jimmy Garoppolo a huge extension and he's going to be their guy for the long run, or they've gone younger and drafted somebody and that's going to be their guy for long. I don't think the Rodgers and Niners thing ever happens. Like, there's just no way it really lines up. Time-wise, I wouldn't be surprised if he's the kind of guy that holds a grudge against the Niners for the rest of his life and he never wants to play for him. Because they passed on him at first overall in the draft back then in 05. But
isn't he also the guy that would have a grudge so massive for the Packers for kind of pushing him out, even though that's how he got his job, that he would want to come somewhere to put them down?
Yeah, maybe. But here's the thing, too. Is this is all the talk of the Niners changing quarterbacks are predicated on the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo maxed out last year. Like, he hit his ceiling last year. And I personally don't think he did. The route on the table is that he was statistically better than Aaron Rodgers last year.
Yes, it is.
By a decent margin. And I'm... For any uncertainty I have about Jimmy Garoppolo and how good he can be in 2020, I have the same concerns about Aaron Rodgers and how good he's going to be in 2020. And I'm not sure the Packers care because they haven't done a lot to improve the weapons around him. They signed Devin Funchess this offseason when they had a chance to draft somebody in the first round. They traded up instead to draft Rodgers' replacement. Like, you talk about Kyle Shanahan's confidence in Jimmy Garoppolo. What's Matt LaFleur's confidence in Aaron Rodgers? Or maybe he's just a jerk and he doesn't want to work with him.
Yeah, I think the last part of that is on the money. And that's something that I was actually hip to very, very, very early on. Mm. As talented as he is, yeah, he can be extremely difficult and prickly of a personality. And the irony in that is all over the place because, you know, it was maybe he got it from Brett Favre. I don't know. Maybe he always had like I kind of go back to the things you see and hear about Rodgers now, because I do think that the narrative has changed a little bit about him,
mm-hmm.
About his demeanor and his attitude and kind of what a teammate he is, even though he is a great player. And I think you said it very well. You know, maybe the greatest thrower of the football of all time.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because I think the things that were always there have kind of bubbled to the surface. And I don't know whether it's, you know, because Brett Favre was kind of that way to him when he came in, or whether, you know, I just hear the things that I hear about Rodgers' personality now. And look, the 49ers blew it in 05, I guess. I mean, but I will say this. Like, I can see where he has a meeting with the 49ers and the 49ers are put off by the meeting. Like, that's not – now, should they have still taken him? Yes. And that's not really where I want to go with this conversation. But I can definitely understand where you would have been rubbed the wrong way by him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, you just watch him – Watch him on the sideline, man. He just looks miserable to play with. I've never seen him excited about anything.
Yeah, and he's
maybe I'm
well, no,
far into it.
Well, and he also won early. Like, that's the thing. Yeah. Like I think he won early, and I think he's kind of – I mean, in some ways, I think he's kind of over it. And I think he's also acknowledged the fact that, you know, he's had some games where he hasn't played well and his teams have lost. He's had some games where he, you know, hasn't played well, come back, and they've had some weird losses that really weren't his fault. Like, he's kind of – I think he's almost resigned to, hey, I won one. If I win another one, that would be great. But you know what? A lot of it is luck, and most of it's determined on, you know, based on, yeah, I'm going to get all the credit if we win, but most of it's based on things that I can't control. So I'm just kind of over it. Like, I feel like that's kind of how he plays. Like, hey, I would love to win another one, and if I do, I'm going to soak it all up, and I'm going to be, you know, on another level of greats because I'll have more than one. But he also kind of understands how random it is too. And because he understands how random it is, the passion for playing is just kind of meh.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I just don't think that that's the kind of player the 49ers are going to go get.
And to your point on Garoppolo, the only way this even becomes a conversation is if, because Jimmy Garoppolo's issue is perception, I think, at this point, and not reality. When you look at his numbers and you look at his performance, like we were talking about Draymond Green and said, hey, look, you know, Draymond Green, you know, this year's going to kind of tell the story. I'm not going to go as far as to say that this year tells the full story on Jimmy Garoppolo, but like, what's the real knock on Jimmy Garoppolo? Like, the knock is more, well, he can't win the big, like, it's kind, he's kind of got that he can't win the big one, or he didn't do enough when the 49ers won in the playoffs, or, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, it's this intangible, like, well, he didn't get it done, so he's kind of put in the category of can't get it done a little bit.
Yeah.
Although, how do we know that he can't get it done? Because we've really only seen him have a chance to do it once.
Right.
So it's a weird, he's in a weird place, well, because he's answered every call except they didn't win the Super Bowl,
yeah,
which wasn't entirely his fault, but he didn't play well. I don't know. He's in a weird place where it's almost like he's cast as if he's, you know, lost five or six times in the playoffs in a row.
Yeah. And I think the issue started last year where he didn't play well in week one. He beat a bad Bengals team in week two, but only threw it 25 times. He played better than his stats week three against Pittsburgh, but not everybody's watching every 49ers game super close, so it looks like he had a bad game against a good Pittsburgh defense. 181 yards the following week against Cleveland. Like, the numbers weren't great, and so the narrative became, oh, well, the Niners are winning in spite of Jimmy Garoppolo. It's the running game. It's this and that. Can they win a game when they put it on his right arm? And he did. He beat Arizona twice. He was excellent in week 17 at Seattle. He didn't throw a touchdown, but he was 18 of 22 for 285. The best performance by a 49ers quarterback in Seattle since, like, early Alex Smith, maybe. And then he had the game in New Orleans in week 14 where they put it on his arm and he threw for 349 yards and four touchdowns. So the narrative then became like, okay, well, can he do it in the playoffs? And he didn't. He was fine against Minnesota, but he only threw it 19 times.
Well, he didn't have to, though, right? Until the one throw in the Super Bowl,
right? So here's the thing. So here's my thing with Garoppolo and why I will say, like, I'm not going to write him off entirely as a quarterback, and I don't think that his performance in the playoffs says anything about his future or his ceiling. But he didn't get it done this year in the playoffs. Here's the deal: when people talk about that Green Bay game where they threw it eight times, he completed six of those throws for 77 yards. They threw it eight times, and people defending Garoppolo will say, well, they were running the ball so effectively, they didn't need to throw. Dude, if Patrick Mahomes is quarterbacking the 49ers, they never have a game where they're throwing it eight times. That's, like, no matter how effective the run game is being. And so, I don't think he was very good in the playoffs, so I think that's still a benchmark he has to reach. But he's reached every single other one, and You can't base a guy's entire reputation off one playoff performance. And I know that that's how it goes, and I know that that's how the 24-hour sports news cycle goes and social media and everything. But I just, I, 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 the much larger sample size, the 16-game sample size we got of Garoppolo in the regular season, particularly the back half of the year when he was more comfortable on his surgically repaired ACL and more comfortable with the passing game and Emmanuel Sanders when they made the trade for him. The larger sample size says Jimmy Garoppolo is pretty damn good. He just didn't get it done in the playoffs. And to say he'll never get it done in the playoffs, I think is premature.
Yeah, we absolutely don't know the answer to that question. And look, every year's different. Like, I mean, did Kyle Shanahan go away from Jimmy Garoppolo in the Minnesota game? Yes. Was Jimmy Garoppolo shaky in the Minnesota game to the point where the 49ers had it in check and it felt like if he made one more mistake, mm-hmm. it could completely flip the game in a manner where the Vikings could actually have a chance to win?
Yeah.
Yeah, that did happen. So I actually look at the Minnesota game as more okay, that was the game that there were some concerns. And then once the 49ers were dominating running the ball against Green Bay, it just didn't, you know, it just didn't matter. And dominating their offense with their defense as well, you know, until the game got out of hand. So I'm with you. I still think, you know, and I hear you on the timeline not matching up. I just wonder if things continue to come to a head, and I think things are going to come to a head with Rodgers and the Packers unless they have another really, really good year, which they could. I mean, he is that good. I mean, he's been winning regular season games and even playoff games, you know, unhappily for, you know, the better part of a decade. I mean, yeah. Like he's done that a lot. So could he do it one more time? I think he could. I wonder if there isn't at least the conversation from the outside, if the 49ers don't win it again and the Packers don't win it again, as to will those two sides try to facilitate, you know, some kind of meeting somewhere. I don't think it's going to be a story, but I do think it's going to be a talking point, if that makes sense.
I'm interested first in, it's definitely going to be a talking point because Aaron Rodgers grew up rooting for the 49ers, this and that. It's part of why the Tom Brady thing was a talking point to begin with. But I'm fascinated to see first how the next year or two of Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay goes. Because it might get ugly.
I think it's going to, unless they win a Super Bowl.
Right. I can't wait for the random Peter King piece that drops the bit of knowledge that Aaron Rodgers is taking his last snap for the Packers and all that jazz.
I think we're at least it would be at least 9 months away from that.
Yeah, but next offseason is what I'm waiting for, especially if they regress this year, which I think they're going to.
Yeah, I mean, they had a lot of things go right. There's no doubt about that. All right, Kyle, that's it. 4 hours.
I left stuff on the table, man.
I know, I did too. I thought we were getting to this Rodgers thing like 2 hours ago. I mean, there was a ton both yesterday and today, but especially yeah. today, where it was just, you know, we'll have to do it. We'll have to save it for next time. Thanks a lot. You'll be back with Bonte Stein and Guru this week.
Sure
and
will.
I'm back, I think, on Wednesday right now. So keep it locked right here. 95.7 The Game. We'll see you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.